Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk podcast. We help you build a thriving creative practice. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza! You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into today's episode.
Shall we?
Today's episode is brought to you by Plot Devices, creators of the Story Clock workbook. If you love writing and find joy in the process of putting words on a page, then the folks at Plot Devices believe that you sit on a throne of lies. Writing is hard. As a result, a lot of cool story ideas get left unmade. But with the Story Clock workbook, you get to break open your story ideas quickly to find an organic narrative structure, mining your ideas, resources, and inspiration for every last ounce of potential. Whether you're looking to write a screenplay, novel, sermon, wedding toast, ransom note, even a podcast ad, the Story Clock workbook can help you get your story ideas out of your head alive. Learn more about how you can make writing less gross at plotdevices.co and get 20% off your first order by using the code CREATIVEPEP at checkout. This episode is also brought to you by Skillshare. Explore new skills, deepen existing passions, and get lost in creativity. Where am I? I'm in creativity with classes from Skillshare. Learn about illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, business, marketing, and more. With Skillshare's short classes, you can move your creative journey forward without putting your life on hold. I've been recently checking out DKNG's vector classes. Those people are the masters. Good buddies of mine, and whoa, they are masters at Illustrator. Go check that out. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/creativepep, where our listeners get 2 free months of premium membership. Premium membership. Thanks to for the Skillshare free months, Skillshare. Go to skillshare.com/creativepep for 2 free months. This is also brought to you by Scoutbooks. Scoutbooks makes fully customizable notebooks that can help you connect with your people in powerful ways. Design every page of your own notebook to share your big ideas to clients, friends, and family. Create a city guide, share industry tips, organize an event, or keep it simple with a pocket-sized notebook for doodling and dreaming. Known for durable 100% recycled papers, colorful inks, and super service, get started at Scoutbooks, scoutbooks.com. It's not Scoutbooks, scoutbooks.com. It's just scoutbooks.com. Just for Creative Pep Talk listeners, use promo code PEPTALK2020, all capital letters and capital numbers, although all numbers are capitals, aren't they? At checkout for 10% off any order. PEPTALK2020, all caps for 10% off. Thanks, Scoutbooks. I know I get excited on this show about the guests that we have on here, but I can tell you right now from the bottom of my heart with most sincerity, I have never been so excited about an episode of this podcast in my life. Today on the show, we have illustrator and comedian and creative hero, Abby Jacobson. Abby Jacobson. Can you believe it? I cannot. Even while I was recording this, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I was in the moment, like soaking it up and like being grateful and excited to sit across from this creative hero of mine. But as soon as she left, I just like melted into a puddle for the rest of the day. I was like almost catatonic in shock by how awesome this conversation was. If you don't know, Abby is the co-creator and co-star of the Comedy Central TV series Broad City. If you haven't seen Broad City, it's probably one of the most hilarious things ever made, and definitely one of the funniest, if not the funniest thing that's been on TV in the past decade. Yes, it's raunchy and, dare I say, edgy. But I actually think that it shocks some people, and I get that, but I think most people are shocked by seeing women do this type of comedy. And in fact, I think that's kind of what makes it so groundbreaking. In Broad City, the women, Abby and Alana and all the other people shown, they're first and foremost people and humans above all else. And for that reason, it's unlike anything I've ever seen before. Plus, it's just ridiculously funny. Me and my wife, Sophie, have just died laughing watching this show a billion times. I cannot tell you how lovely Abby truly is and was in this encounter. The conversation was an absolute gift and joy, and the gracious sharing and reflection that she does in this chat just blew me away. Abby, again, if you're listening to this, thank you so much. You are freaking incredible and so inspiring. Ugh, I can't even deal with it. I hope that we get to do round two of this chat one day. Before we get started, though, one thing. There are some swears in this episode, so be warned if you've got kid ears about, hopefully attached to kid heads. Okay, that was weird. Yeah, if there's kids listening, just be aware. And two, we got to record this episode live in LA in Stacey Michelson's studio that she shares with the design studio Raven and Crow. Huge, huge thanks to them. It was a magical location, flooded in natural light in LA, dripping with creativity. This chat would not have been the same in any other space. Stay tuned to the end of the episode to find out how you can check out Stacey's and Raven and Crow's creative work, or check out the show notes at creativepeptalk.com/episodes. Also, huge thanks to my buddy, Chris Graham of Chris Graham Mastering, for coming to LA, helping me record this episode. He took all the burden of the technical stuff of recording this thing so that I could be fully present in this chat. I couldn't have done that without you, man. Thank you so much, Chris. Love you, brother. You mean so much to me. And thanks for helping me make this happen. Okay, that's enough preamble. And I should mention, Chris really produced this episode. He helped me fine-tune some of the questions, even added some secret sauce to some of these questions that turned this conversation into something I never saw coming. Thank you, Chris. Okay, that's enough preamble. Without further ado, gives me the greatest pleasure to share my conversation with the wonderful and extremely talented Abby Jacobson. Pentel sign pen.
Carrying this little thing because I had this big bag, but I think I have.
Yes, that's it. That's blue it. Is fantastic too. Yeah. Actually, if you do a blue and red, you get a really cool overlay. I'm into it. Do we need to adjust this?
Just down.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, good to go.
Do you want me to wear this?
Yeah, this is the modern. Those are brand new.
Wow, okay.
They're pretty good. I kind of do a one-ear thing because I get claustrophobic
in there. It's quite
it's
intense.
It's kind of consuming, yeah.
In a good way, but they really...
I'm not there yet.
I'm going to keep them both on and
okay.
See.
Okay, yeah. Get all in. Are we rolling?
We're rolling.
I figured as much.
First
of all... Thank you so much.
Oh my goodness.
It means the world to me to have you here.
My pleasure. Are you kidding? This is cool.
First things first, I was going to say I have three kids.
So you
I have
do?
That's pretty much the response I get every time.
I feel like I might be like older than you and you have three kids.
Not by a lot, I don't think.
Did you have kids young?
Like when we were 20.
How old are you?
We had our first kid. 33.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
When you were 20, you had a kid.
Yeah. We had, yeah.
Wow,
we had.
So you're like a teen.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think I didn't get the like millennial memo because I was living in England. My wife is British. I didn't know we were not having kids or waiting 20 years. So I was just kind of doing what my parents did and just.
I think that that's.
Got started.
It's probably cool right now, right? Where you're like.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is cool now. And we're in the Pax Romana of no toddlers, no teens.
Where they're like...
They're cool. They're fun.
Not that toddlers and teens aren't cool and fun.
I agree with that.
For those toddlers and teens listening, you guys are great.
Yeah, there's a lot of big toddler base to
this
podcast.
Yeah, I know.
But I told them I've got an 11-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And I told them that I was going to go meet Nia. And they were freaking out. My son is bonkers.
I think the Nia in the TV show is a little bit more popular.
Well, I don't know if that's true. They're big fans.
How many people went to see the movie?
We did. We were there opening day. My son's like Ninjago crazy.
It is. All my friends that have kids, especially little boys, are obsessed with Ninjago.
Yeah. It's pretty dope.
The coolest. I have like a Lego of me.
I'm
like, oh, what the fuck?
It's so good. I told him that, and my 4-year-old said, "What? We're meeting Nia?" I was like, "Oh no, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to go." So they're super pumped about it.
It's also very disappointing.
What is?
Like when I've been with my friends that have kids, and they're like, "She's Nia." They're like, "Don't get
no,
it.
She's
doesn't
not.
Make it. She's not."
I heard Jemaine Clement talk about meeting people and being like, "Yeah, I'm like the crab on Moana," and they're like, "No,
no, you're not.
It's not cool." And then the other way, the other awkward nerve way that I'm going to start this off is using your own words against you.
There's been so many words.
You told this once to Kelly Ripa, and I'm saying it to you from the bottom of my heart. So thank you. Thank you for your talent and your role modelness. I thought that was the most appropriate way
and
to
then
start.
I think that's where I like faint backwards.
And thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually envisioned, because I thought, I know you like slapstick, I envisioned pretending to pass out at that moment, like doing a back over the chair thing, but I didn't want to freak you out.
I think this is a bad space for that.
It is. Yeah. Okay. So I want to get to things that you're like really pumped about now creatively, but part of the reason I wanted to have you on the show is because you embody, your creative path embodies a bunch of the things that we talk about on the show all the time.
No, I wanted to say real quick, I don't know, like I do listen to podcasts, but, I don't know like how this slipped past me.
Oh,
but when you asked me to do this, I got it. So it's so my thing.
Yeah.
I have told so many people about this since this happened. It's so I'm very much into like reading about process and like self-help. Mm-hmm. I love that shit, but I think it's been more like not like the podcasts I listen to haven't been about like creative.
Yeah.
In particular, it's more like growth and like all that shit, like Oprah shit, you know? Yeah.
It is. It is like
or
Oprah.
Like the daily. I'm like, I try to catch up on like news stuff in podcasts. But this, since I found out, I'm like ashamed that I didn't know because it's so up my alley and I can't believe I somehow didn't know about it.
Well, that is the sweetest thing ever.
No,
and
I really
appreciate it. Like,
I didn't know how I didn't.
But I can't move on from that. I hope you don't mind. We're going to go back and kind of go through stuff that you've probably talked about, but hopefully there's some nuance in it that I'd like to tease out for my audience that are creators.
I would love it because I am in a spot right now where I like need your podcast. So I'm like, let's get into it.
Okay. I'll do my best. We're going to go deep into the path. So first of all, I thought we could start by going back. We do a lot of like tactical stuff, like ideas on how to get your work out there. And one of my all-time favorite ideas that I ever heard was what you used to do with the MoMA gifts gift shop.
I forgot. And it's so good now that I have like a relationship with them. But it was
that's
ridiculous.
That's like full circle with your podcast.
Yeah.
Can you tell the listeners about what your illustration hustle was back in the day?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to even go back farther, I didn't even study illustration. I went to MICA and I was general fine arts.
Okay.
So I did mostly drawing and painting. I concentrated in video. So it was like really like all the things, but I kind of did larger drawings. And then when I moved to New York, I didn't have any space. I didn't have a studio. I lived in like a small apartment in Astoria. And so I kind of only had my desk and I started illustration stuff, like little drawings. And I don't know why I decided to make like to make cards. I think I was making these cityscape drawings. I would buy like big stacks of paper, like nice paper when they were like on sale, and be like, well, if I bought these, this 100 pieces, I have to make 100 drawings. Like I would do these little things.
That's awesome.
And then I would sell them.
Tricking yourself.
Yeah. And then my brother and my dad are both graphic designers. And so my brother helped me like format the cards. He like helped me do that. Which I still have so many of these cards in my mom's basement, truly.
Yeah.
And I really like them, but it was just such like a bizarre thing that I was like attempting to do simultaneously as like the comedy stuff. And I would try and sell them to stores in the city. I kind of like carried a big bag. But one of the things I did was the MoMA design store. That's like right next to the entrance to MoMA has all these cards. And I did it with my greeting cards. And then I also did it with my senior year. You know how you have like a senior show? Mm-hmm. So I made a post, like you get postcards made for the senior show, and I had a lot of those left over, and I did these maps. That was like my big thing. Maps from memory, and they were like these bigger drawings. And I had all these left over, and I put those and my greeting cards in the shelf of the MoMA design store as if they were like on sale, hoping that someone would go up to the cash register to buy them, and they'd be like... These aren't for sale. Like, who is this genius artist? We have to
contact them.
I don't know
find...
what I thought would happen.
It is amazing.
Yeah,
is
nothing did
cool
happen
idea.
From
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
so I don't
cares?
Know.
It was,
it was
great. Yeah, I love that story. So I'm really interested in the kind of pivot from what you were doing there to comedy. And I know, I know the story.
I just listened to that.
What?
Where you were like, that's the thing. Pivot.
Oh my gosh. You got to quit doing that. You're like totally throwing me off.
Well, I mean, I was like, I got to get into that. I want to like,
That's really lovely. Yeah. golly. But I am interested. One of the things I think is like the hardest thing for creative people is their superpower often is like in seeing infinite possibilities. But then that's also like analysis paralysis and, they can't choose a path to put energies into.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious of when you started taking, I don't know if it was classes or doing stuff with UCB, whether you were in the back of your mind thinking, should I be using that time to be focused on my visual art? Were you working that out?
I think I like always thought of this as a problem. My dad brings up this dinner we had. He came down to Baltimore and we had dinner when I was at MICA once, and he brings this up a lot where I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, again, general fine arts major, which is like was always seen as like a negative kind of at MICA, something I was, because you didn't have a
niche or
Whereas a lot of my friends were like illustration or design, and I was like, I don't know. I'm interested in all of these things. And I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't have a specialty. Yeah. And am I spending too much time exploring all these different things? And now, I'm jumping ahead, but now I'm like, no, like, that's my thing. Like, I feel like I'm lucky enough I get to have the freedom of exploring different things. That's like the whole thing of what I do. Whereas I think for other people, a specialty is like, better suited. Uh-huh. But for me, like that freedom is how I like thrive. Yeah. But yeah, when I started out in New York, I mean, it was tricky because my senior year at MICA, I did really know I wanted to be an actor, which was like something I didn't like admit. But I moved to New York to go to Atlantic Theater Conservatory. So I was like going to go to this conservatory for 2 years for dramatic acting. Mm. And that didn't work out like that, like I'd planned, because I hated it so much. Yeah. And the process that school, I don't know, just the teacher, it just like was
didn't
not for
work
me.
For you. Yeah.
But when I found UCB and when I found comedy, it was like, it clicked so hard and I was like obsessed. Mm. And so the balancing of that, and then the drawing at night, and then I had a job. Like, all those things kept me so busy and, like, kind of ignited in all the ways. Yeah. But definitely, I also was like, well, I'm not a real artist. I'm drawing these, like, fucking greeting cards. Mm-hmm. Like, I still feel that way right now, where I'm like, well, I haven't, like, drawn in I don't know how long. Like, I want, how do I like pick that part of me up again? Mm-hmm. So it is, for me, it's like a weird balance that I'm kind of constantly struggling with.
Yeah.
In a good way too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's like they kind of play off of each other and create kind of a forward momentum where when you're stuck in this thing and you go spend creative energy on something else, it kind of unlocks it and they feed off of each other. Just on a recent episode, we were talking about how, for me, I had a big breakthrough. When I started doing podcasting, I was already a full-time illustrator. But there was something about public speaking and analogies and metaphors that I was like, I don't know what it is I do, but that's the thing that it does it for me more than any other thing, this analogy metaphor thing. And it was really torn up because I'm like, am I an illustrator or am I a public speaker? Like, am I a podcaster? What is it? And then I heard a public speaker say, he was going to give an analogy. And then he said, let me give you an illustration. And I was like,
whoa,
the same thing. And so there is this, like, I feel like if you can get deeper beyond the what you make and deeper into why you're making it, what is the wheel in you that kind of propels this creative act forward? Yeah, you see that they're not all different things anyway. You know what I mean? They're all interconnected.
Exactly. So it's sort of just like the medium I'm going to choose at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going back to, you said it clicked, and this is at the risk of being pedantic, but I want to like zoom in to what did it mean that it clicked? Because, you know, I want to help people recognize when things are clicking, and because it's still a bet, because you're like, it feels like this UCB thing is clicking, the comedy thing's clicking, but you're still like, you don't know it was going to go anywhere.
Oh, I mean, by click, I don't mean like, I'm going to make a living off
right.
of this.
Yeah.
Like, that was not there. I mean, I'm still like, what's going on?
yeah.
But no, it was more, I mean, the art thing, it never had to click because I was brought up in a very creative environment. Like, art supplies were like the gifts always. My brother is an incredible artist, like could just draw from the get go. And we were just, I drew kind of constantly as a kid. So that was never like a choice or never like a realization or had to click in. And so I went to, I lived with, a friend of mine from MICA, who I don't speak to anymore because you know, falling out. And then I like wrote about, yeah. like I used that scenario in Broad City. And I think I did it. You never met her.
Yeah.
And I think I lovingly.
I think I know what episode you're talking about.
I mean, but like the whole roommate situation, like it was just like,
yeah.
you know, but she is the one who, I had done video work at MICA and I was working in anthropology and like drawing. And she was like, I quit Atlantic and I was like devastated. I was like, I want to be an actor. I'm not, I clearly can't do this, whatever they're doing in Atlantic, which was like repetition and like scene and like analyzing a scene in like such a heady way that left me like very frozen. And she was like, have you ever been to the Upright Citizens Brigade? And I had never heard of the show. And I was like, no, she was like, I really think that you would love it. And then I went by myself one night and it was just some improv show. I don't know what the fuck they were doing. And I was just like overwhelmed with like, what are they doing? Like, this is just like joyous and hilarious and like physical and instant. And there was something that just clicked in terms of like, I want to do that. So for me, it wasn't a click of like, I'm good at, I didn't know if I would be good at it.
Yeah.
It was just seeing a thing. And I think that's something that people can like
identify way more than whether or not they're like good or they're going to be involved in it. But just knowing that you are like, wow, I want to be a part of whatever that is. That was that. And then I started doing it and like taking classes. And I think, and I don't know, we just met, but I think I'm way more introverted than I am when I'm performing, obviously. Sure. But like some performers are the other way around.
I'm
like,
similar
I'm
to that.
Pretty introverted and shy. And so it took me a sec to like open up in improv and be confident. And that's a big thing. It's like stepping off the wall. Like there's an improv, there's like a back wall where like the performers play. And when you come out into a scene, you're like stepping off the wall confidently, even if you're playing like a not confident character. You have to like be bold and like go out and do the thing, which can relate to all the things you're trying to put out into the world. And it took me a long time to be like, I'm gonna go, you know, just fucking keep stepping off the back wall. And then there were moments where I was like, I think I'm good at this. And I was never really successful at improv, like never got on a team at UCB. And wasn't really like accepted into that. I was in the community, but like actually like on the stage until Alana and I started doing the web series. Yeah. So that was always like a little bit of like a chip, or like it was a little bit of like a constant doubt because I couldn't get the thing that
it
seemed like to be successful. You know, like someone like Zach Woods was like my improv 101 teacher. And then you watch his career and you're like, oh, well, he's on the stage, and then he gets like commercials, and you just like kind of watch like people's trajectory and feel like that's the only way.
That's like the level by level. Like this is the linear path.
Yeah. I don't know what your question was, but I've taken it somewhere else.
No, it's fantastic. I love the concept of coming off the wall. Like that is incredible. I think, I have a tendency, and I think a lot of creative people too, to try to over prepare for things instead of just making
stuff. It's kind of like showing people.
Yeah.
I would imagine for an artist, like showing people your work or like trying to submit it to something or right. Yeah. I don't know what.
I call it writing on stage, but I talk about it in every, I've been working on a book publicly. Like I've put it out through the podcast and I did a class and I did all this stuff, but it's out there in real time in front of people, so that I can actively get a feedback loop and improve it over time.
Well, and in doing that, you're like holding yourself accountable.
Yes.
If you don't tell people, I often do that where I'm like, I'm doing this thing, and then it's like, I got to do the thing I just told.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It's a good trick.
Yes.
So why did you choose? I mean, it sounds like it was just kind of serendipity a little bit, but what made you do improv opposed to stand up? Did you ever think about it at that time?
I'd done stand up a couple times. It just isn't, it's not really like my style of comedy. It's weird. Like Alana and I did Broad City Live for years and years at UCB. And then we like went on tour across the country once and did it for like 3 weeks. And that I feel comfortable coming out and as myself, but the writing of jokes in that style is just not me.
Yeah.
But I always did characters. So like my solo thing when I was coming up was like more character work based on, it would be like kind of a offshoot of me. So it'd be like that I would come out and be like super insecure on stage, but I was never like, most stand-ups are, you know, like Hannibal. Alana does Alana, you know, which is great. And it just doesn't feel, I don't know what it is. Yeah. It's a different thing.
Part of the reason I ask was because, I mean, everybody has to pick a path, but also as I've been reading your book, it feels very like stand up observations, and it's really funny, and it doesn't, It still feels like your voice. Like it definitely sounds like you.
I think the book, thank you for reading
it. Yeah. Like, it's amazing.
It's written in a way that I think if you don't know the tone, you maybe think I'm being really, like there are chapters that are written like exaggerated. Like if you listen to it, you hear it. But I'm like, my mom, or like, I'm just sort of like, I wonder what, like,
what did your mom say?
No, no, she loved it. But like, I wonder sometimes like the tone, if everyone like hears the ridiculousness, like when I go on and on and on, that is a little what you're saying. Like, I guess that would be my stand up, but I guess because it is this like exaggerated thing that it's, I don't know. I guess I never, I don't know. But I do miss performing live so much. Yeah. Like there's a chapter in there toward the end. That was the first chapter I wrote that, is, oh man, what is it called? When and Where.
Right.
And it's about like all the different scenarios in which like I could run into my ex.
Yeah.
And I thought that that is a thing that everyone I think can relate to, mm-hmm. whether it's an ex or someone that you're like, okay, like it's going to happen. Yeah. Where are they? And I just took it to like an extreme, but the voice in which I'm reading it or writing it is not me. It's me, but it's like far gone. Yeah. And that I guess would be my like on stage persona, but it's a different, it's not like, hey guy, you know, like it's just,
I
different. Mean,
yeah, I think, and also I love the, where you're talking about all the different scenarios that could go wrong. And, but it's similar to that, but I feel like,
It's like the most Jewish part of me.
Well, that works though.
Yeah, that works. That
as far as right. I know. But I don't know. I feel like a lot of stand-ups are the most extreme, or a slice of who they are pushed up to like 11. Seems like that's
true.
Yeah,
I guess it is. I guess I just,
I'm trying
never
to tell
did,
you to do stand-up.
Well, no, okay? I guess I never did that like circuit.
Right,
and it,
yeah.
So it's come out in like other ways.
Sure.
But no, I have recently missed doing live stuff. Like I went to see Mike Birbiglia's last show.
His Broadway show?
Yeah, he did it out here too.
Oh,
and
okay.
It was
amazing.
I was like, oh, I'm like so that is stand up, but it's more storytelling. And it's like, that's a thing I've been thinking about.
Last episode of this podcast, I went on a huge
rant
about Mike Birbiglia's new show.
I started.
And I'm just like, don't do that. Don't start at the back.
I started at the back.
I get better, you know, if you start. That's why I took the first 100 episodes off. Cause I was like, completists want to start at the beginning. And
I clearly like it. I'm sorry.
I guess you're sad here. but no, that show, I love it. And I'm very interested in this new kind of slight shift with comedy towards storytelling.
Have you seen Jacqueline Novak's show?
No.
Get on your knees.
No, I haven't seen it. Are
she's
you just telling me to get on my knees?
What? She's a friend of mine. It's truly a full show about blowjobs. I think she just ended her run in New York, but I think it might be coming back here.
Okay.
But it's...
Yeah.
I just kissed
my
fingers.
No special or anything yet?
I'd be surprised if she didn't do... Because it's just so... It's so ripe to be put on Netflix or whatever.
Right,
but,
yeah.
It is a mix of, or it's like this new thing, what you're saying, where it's like, she's a stand up, but it's like not that. It's,
yeah,
it's
I'm
on
obsessed.
One topic.
Mm-hmm. Hannah Gatsby's another one.
Yeah.
I'm just like, man, this is a different thing.
Yeah.
So when you were finding your voice creatively, I've heard you call your humor slapstick. And my favorite thing that, about your characters are when you're psyching yourself up to get tough. That's one of my favorite things. Do you have that? Do you have other things that you over time, first of all, how did you start finding those things? And then do you have like a utility belt of things of like, oh, these are like when you're writing or performing, are you thinking, do you have go-to like energies?
Do you mean like my in real life, how I psych myself up?
No,
or like
no, no,
Abby
I mean
in
like
the show?
When you're doing a performance or you're going to write something or do you like with your comedy style, do you have like go-to things of, cause I feel like over time you've clearly, you've found your comedic voice and there's these energies that you go into that are very you. And I just wonder if there are things that you have consciously noticed and you're like, oh, I'll use that. Cause I heard you talking about, the League of Their Own reboot and
yeah,
you were
wrap that on Sunday night.
Oh man, I'm so pumped about this. Yeah, I bet that feels good.
It does feel good. Yeah.
But I heard you talking about how the comedy element, because there's a lot of heavy themes, that you felt like that's something you felt like you knew you could do. And I just wonder if going into that, you've got tools in your utility belt to be like, oh, I know how to do my thing in that way.
Yeah, it's interesting because I felt that in the opposite way for the other parts of this show where I was like, you know, just, I think, I would love to hear someone talk about that's like successful talking about how like what I'm about to talk about, which is like,
you.
I just did this pilot and I do it like comedy, even when there's no audience, there's a crew. And like, even when I'm obviously on Broad City, it was just different. It's like Alana and I just, that is a thing I know so well. We know if it's work, like, I just know that like what works and that
is she
that
an
usually,
audience member in that?
Yeah.
For you?
I mean, we know if something's, it's like, I break in the scene constantly, you know, like, but the crew, like, it's cut and everyone, there is kind of like an audience. Yeah. But even if no one's laughing with comedy, like you just, I can feel it more.
You've got sixth sense taste thing.
And it's just like what I've like honed. Like it's like working out. You're like, those are my like toned muscles. And then for this, I was like, I watch a lot of drama. I feel as a human.
You've got
so
the
I know
sensitivity
what,
to it. Yeah.
But performance wise, it was something I was very nervous about. And it's also, we're telling a lot of people's stories. And so some are from my point of view and some are like, you know, my story is like in there, but there's also a lot of things that aren't like that's a lot about race and a lot about, sexual identity. And so they're not all mine.
Yeah.
And that there was like a lot of pressure, but for me, performance wise, I was like, okay, I'm not a trained actor in this way. And it was really scary. I was like, I think I can do this. Like I've had that situation before where I was like really nervous, but I also think it's so good to be nervous. Like nervous is so close to being like excited, but
yeah, true.
Being nervous isn't bad. Like it means you care about it. And so it was just something it's just harder for me on set to know if something's working. Like
yes.
I can feel it, but like a take where I wasn't sure might be the better take. And I don't know.
Quick shout out to our sponsors. First up, we got Plot Devices. Plot Devices was co-created by a friend of mine, Seth Worley. He's one of the most inspiring creative friends that I have. I love this guy's work. He's so awesome, man. And this product is so good. It's a little notebook. It has a little story clock. It's like a circle that has these lines coming out of it so that you can plan a story, a sermon, a podcast, any kind of story, a talk that you want to give, good stories work in a circle. They kind of come full circle and the ending is surprising and inevitable because it comes all the way around. And this little device is excellent for planning out whatever story you're telling. Go to plotdevices.co and use promo code CreativePep in all caps for 20% off your first order. You know, I have a lot of creatives that want to work with me on their creative practice. And the first thing I tell them, the first thing I ask them is, have you taken my side quest creative career class on Skillshare? Because that is going to take you really far without any of my help. There are so many great ways to further your education without going in insane debt. You have access to ideas from some of the top creative professionals in the world at Skillshare.com/creativepep. You can get 2 free months. Highly recommend it. If you're stuck, it might be because you need to push your creative practice forward by developing new skills and new ideas. And the place you're going to find them is from these top professionals. Go to Skillshare.com/creativepep for 2 free months. Do you know who's a huge fan of Abby Jacobson? Our sponsor, Scout Books. Scout Books makes incredible little notebooks that are screen printed on the cover. You can print on the inside, you know, create a guided journal of some kind, or maybe even a client gift. I don't know, but I've used them a few times and I love their products. If you want a delicious notebook that smells amazing, like fresh printed materials, go to scoutbooks.com, use promo code PEPTALK in all caps, 2020, PEPTALK 2020 for 10% off your first order. You're not going to be disappointed. They're the real deal. Love them. Scout Books. That's one of the things that I talk about comedy a lot on the show, because I think one of the best things within that practice is that there's such a clear target of what's good. Like, good is laughing. Or right. Even if they're not laughing, there's a, you know, there's more of a, you can see it on their face, or there's things, there's metrics. Whereas illustration or design or even drama, there's not as tangible of a thing where you're like, yeah, I hit the mark. So it's harder to kind of learn from your choices, because you have to, you don't have that feedback loop where you can just start, you know what I mean?
Right.
I find that really interesting. I think that, did you start to find a sensitivity to it, to where you started noticing?
I think I've been thinking a lot, and like on Broad City, we would think about this a lot too, because even when it's comedy, like, it still can be something that you're intending the audience to feel. Like you're laughing because you're feeling a thing.
Yeah.
Like, it can be like a very dark thing, but you're laughing at. But this was even more of a conscious thought process of like, well, what do I, as a writer, like, I kept like, I'm very much, I always talk about like hats. I'm like, Jesus, well, like, now I'm a writer right here. And now I'm going to like take that off, because I'm going to, like, I'm acting today and this is like a lot. But as a writer, and then as an actor too, I feel like I go into it more now, like, well, what do I want the audience to feel here? Yeah. And then what does the character feel in every like little beat? And I think this new show is very much from my character's point of view. So it was like kind of a very clear, okay, like, if I feel like, I don't know, there's like these clear, like, sort of mile markers of like, if I feel this way, then I am doing what I'm setting out to do, and hopefully the audience will feel that. And at a certain point, you just have to be like, I hope this is working. I feel like it's working. Just the same with like drawing something. You're like, my gut is saying like, this is working. And then that's what, like, there's a place where you can't do anything else.
Yes. It's a lighting up of your own taste buds.
Yeah.
And if that's all you have, that's your true north. And I think about when I would go try to design a t-shirt that I think people would want, whatever that broad statement means. I always made the weirdest things that didn't make any sense. But as soon as I would frame it as, what t-shirt would I want to wear?
Yes.
All of a sudden, I get into my own personal taste, and that's some kind of metric that I can hit
on. By saying like how I want people to feel is ultimately how I want to feel.
Yes.
Like, because sometimes I've found myself in the Broad City world, Alana and I would get like, if there was criticism or whatever, you kind of get caught up in that. And then it's like, no, that, like, you can't think about how to make a show to be successful. It's just like how to make the show that you love.
Yes.
And so I'm with League of Their Own. I'm like, some people are going to hate this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm prepared. Mm-hmm. So this is people's favorite movie.
Right.
Where this is not the movie. It's very different. People are going to hate it. I'm probably going to like step away from social media. Truly, because I'm like a cutter. Like, right. I can't handle it.
Yeah.
I'll find the bad ones. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that like, you can never make something that everyone's going to love, but that's also like, of course you want people to love it, but
this is like Star Wars of baseball, in a way.
Yeah. And I'm like, I think people are going to watch it like,
oh, let's see what you're doing, I think there's
probably people that grew up with it that'll feel that way. But I do think what you're trying to do, from the little that I know about it, I think that you're telling a story that needs to be told. And
yeah, and it's also like it's in no way that the movie is still right there.
Sure. Yeah.
It's in no way. There's none of the same characters. It's like a totally different thing. Cause I'm like, I love the movie. That should exist on its own. But, yeah, I think, where was I going to, oh, just the, like, the feeling of like that something is working. Mm-hmm. It just has to like work for me. And I know that some people are not going to,
yeah,
like it.
Yep.
Or I've gotten to a place where I'm like, that's okay.
Yep.
There's so much shit being made that they can find the thing they like. Yeah.
Yeah, that's hilarious. That's a funny way to look at it. So back when you were, before you did the web series, what were your dreams and aspirations? I keep thinking about, I know you're a huge Oprah fan, so I'm assuming you had some intentions at that time. Yeah, were you, I mean, in comedy, this is what I want to do?
I mean, as a kid, like through high school, yeah. I mean, it's so funny. Like it was SNL for sure.
Yeah.
Getting on SNL. That was it. I would do coffee talk. I mean, I write about that in the book. I never sang. So like I couldn't act in anything in high school, because it was always musicals, but I would do the stuff, like I would host the thing as like all these characters. It was very much like SNL, like Gilda Radner was my favorite, Molly Shannon, Amy Poehler, like those, they were like actually when I was in college, but like Sherry O'Terry, like that, I was just like, anyone that grew up with me, excuse me, knows I was obsessed with SNL.
Well, I don't want to say this because it sounds very typical, and maybe just everyone feels that way, but I know that I will have listeners email me and be like, Andy, you should have said. That was my whole thing. I was obsessed with Saturday Night Live, and I was so bold that like through middle school, I told all my teachers were like, what are you looking to do? I'm like, I'm moving to New York and I'm going to try to be on Saturday Night Live. So I totally relate to that 100%.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think this is in the book. I was like, I wrote Lorne Michaels a letter, really? And I was like, I was probably like 13.
Yeah.
And I was like, better get ready because I'm coming to New York and I'm going to be on SNL. I found out it was like Studio 8H. It probably never got to him. And then I made a bet with my brother. I was like, by the time I'm 20, I'm going to be a cast member. $100. I never gave him $100. I was like, clearly didn't get it. But, yeah, I don't know. That was just like it.
Yeah.
Just the energy of that. And like, I don't know.
I'm just curious because, you know, what your dreams and aspirations were during that time generally. Yeah.
Right. Oh, and then when I got to New York and found UCB, I think, again, like this, there was, I don't know what it was. It turned into like, well, I couldn't get an agent. I couldn't book anything. And this is the whole reason Alana and I made Broad City, because both of us were like, we can't get on this stage. We can't get on these teams, but we think we're really funny. But there was still this like level of us being like, even when we started doing the web series, we were like, well, maybe someone will see it and want to hire us as writers. Because kind of, I don't know. And maybe this is like society was like, there wasn't really a lot of women that looked like us that were doing stuff. And I don't know. There's even at UCB, I don't know now, it's been a second, but it was like one woman with seven guys on a team. That was like the view you got when you went to see a show, all the teams. And so it was sort of just like, fuck, this is such a hard space to fill. We got to make our own thing. And then maybe we'll get like hired as staff writers. Right. Like we didn't even like, couldn't even see.
Dream that big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, which is so funny now to think about it, because I had this like whole like sexual awakening so late, but I was like, I'm going to move to LA and write on Ellen.
That's amazing.
Like, so random, just because I was like, well, you know, I was like, there's no way I'm going to write monologues for like, I'm not going to write SNL monologues. I'm not going to write like late night monologues about like politics. That's just not like my vibe. So I was like, well, I can definitely write Ellen's jokes.
Yeah.
No, they're great, but like kind of humor. And I was like, I was probably 25. And I was like, I'm going to move to LA. Guys, everybody knew, like all my friends in New York, I was like, moving to LA. And then I did this show at UCB. It was like a 3-on-3 tournament, improv tournament, right before Thanksgiving. They have this like 3-on-3 tournament that is like awesome, because it gets like really big improvisers and it's just like competitive. And it was like the first time, again, I was never on the Herald team. I didn't get to like perform on stage improv wise very much. And I did this show and it was like great. And my friend afterward, Ashley, was like, why would you move to LA now? Like, you're so good. Like, this, like, stuff's happening here. And I don't know why, her saying that, I was like, you're right. I don't know why I would move to LA right as I'm just getting going in New York, because it felt like it wasn't working. But I guess I couldn't see, like, oh, it is. Like, these little triumphs were working. Yeah. And then I say it, and then Alana and I started doing Broad City.
Yeah. One of the primary reasons I wanted to talk to you is probably the most common theme on this show is about writing your own roles, no matter what you do, finding out who you are, what you want to do, and then showing the world that through what you choose to make on a self-initiated basis. I call them creative side quests. And as you were going through that, what were the conversations with Alana about starting it? What were the first times you started talking about that?
Yeah, we were the two women on our improv team.
Right.
Called Secret Promise Circle. Yeah, and we would we would perform like in all the little teeny theaters, but us and a bunch of guys. And it was, and her brother Elliot was on it too. And it was just so fun and like scrappy and like, just like such a, like a, an incredible, like 2-3 years of like this, like, I don't know. Like, it was just such like a great period of time in my life. And I think in everyone's, where like everyone has a day job they like hate, but at night we would like come out and do comedy, and like we would go to our show and then we would go to the show after and like go to the bar. It was just like such a like pure, creative, like inspiring time. Yeah. And we were just friends, and then I guess both like kept being like, we can't get anything, like what the fuck, like we can't get the next step. And then just our relationship cracked us up, like it's very much what it is on TV. And she was so not like any of my friends I grew up with, just this like, it's so funny, like when I first met her, she would say stuff that is so now more relevant.
Yeah, it's cultural.
But she would say stuff and I was like, what? Like shit like caramel and queer and like everybody's fluid and like all it, like just, but that was like not, I wasn't hearing that. And I was like, who is this girl? You know, like.
That's amazing.
And I was like the straight man. I was like her straight man, where I would always be like, you know, cocking my head to the left or the right and be like, what, dude? And then one day we were like, what if, oh, I remember I did a show with a friend of mine. We did this show at UCB, which is like when you put up a show, it's called a spank, and you're like trying it out. And if they like it, they'll give you notes and you do it again. If they like it, they'll put it up and you'll get a run. And I did the show and I thought it was really good and we got notes. And the friend I did it with was like, I don't want to do this. And I was like so bummed, because I thought like, oh, I'm doing this thing. And Alana was like, I'll do something with you. Mm. Let's like, and the more we just like met, we met at this pizza shop. I will never forget. I hope it's still there. We're right near where the UCB Training Center used to be on 30th and 7th Ave, and I have still have this composition notebook, and it was like, let's just make it about us. Like, what are things that we think are hilarious or fun? And it was like little beats, and we just started writing ideas, and they're like, truly, we like just use a couple of them in the last season, you know, like, cause they hold up, cause it's just stuff you do with your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then we enlisted our friend Rob Michael Hugel, did most of the first season with us as a director and editor. I went on that. There was this database at the time, Improv Resource Center. And it was a place that everyone in the comedy community would be like, hey, I need like extras for my sketch, or like I'm looking for actors or whatever. And he was like, I'm looking to direct stuff. And I was like, Rob, we took an improv together. Do you want to do this? And so he did. He like got to do all that. And then we kind of, I said got to, I don't know if he would agree with that, because we ended up using a lot of other friends that were directors as it kept going. And we were broke, and we would like buy people food, and we would pay the locations $50. And it was like very scrappy, shot in our apartments, you know, all this stuff. And just kept, it was so, Alana and I were also working at the same place called Life Booker, which is like what her job on the show is based off of. And so we figured out a way where we were like G-chatting the show, while we were making like cold calls to salons and shit. And we just started taking it so seriously. Like, there was a schedule. We would shoot like two a weekend, or we would write, and it was like, I don't know why, like the two of us, I mean, I do know why, like the Broad City ended up being successful because, one, the dynamic of us, but also because we both have this like work ethic that clicked, and we were like, you have this too, like let's fucking go. And we made it like a job. And yeah, it was like all we did.
Yeah. It's like, I think that kind of discipline and investment, the tough part is, I think some people might even have the work ethic, but it doesn't come out because they don't believe it's going to pay off, or they don't believe in themselves enough to treat it that way.
But I also think it's the work ethic matched with loving it.
Loving it, yeah. Yeah.
Because I've worked on other projects where I've had to have the same work ethic.
But you weren't loving it.
Didn't love
it. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, I could work with Alana all day, all night.
Yeah.
And we're like hysterical while we're working. And same, I'm like, when I've been doing a project art-wise, yeah, like when you are like clicking in, it's about like when you click into that, you're like, I love, like this is joyous.
Yeah.
And so then the work ethic part flows, because you are like, yeah, I could do this all day.
You're playing.
And you're yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a hard and very rare thing.
Yeah.
I mean, even now I'm like, that's really rare.
Yeah. Doesn't happen all that time. I'm interested too in this, this 3-year time where you're doing this with a group. And because first of all, I think it's interesting because that's kind of the iceberg thing, as everybody knows about Broad City, but they didn't see this period of time of like gestation and fermenting of all these ideas, yeah, and all that stuff. And then I'm also really interested in this idea of Brian Eno's, which is Scenius, and it's like the genius of a scene rather than a lone genius.
Is this in the music book?
I don't know. I heard it from Austin Kleon. Do you know him?
Read it.
He talks about this Scenius thing where, and I'm really curious about this, and my big question is, can you do that again later as a life cycle? Because I was listening to Andre 3000 with Rick Rubin's podcast, and he's talking about how, you know, they had the same thing, similar thing to you're describing, where they called it the dungeon. It was the basement where him and all these rappers and artists were making stuff and like, you know, getting excited about the stuff they were doing. It was just a scene, right? That's where Outkast came from. And I feel like as you get successful, you get more and more isolated as the genius of like,
I was like nodding, and then you said that. I was like, no. Isolated. Yeah. As no,
just like, or you know, maybe not that word, but that's the word he used. Like, it says heavy burden of like, you know, even within Outkast getting you want to do a dad joke or something, made an outcast from Outkast of like singled out to he's this weird phenomenon, but it all of that juice and energy came from the scene. And so the more you get like you're isolated in your own little camp and you're made to be making stuff alone, I just keep wondering if that could be more of a life cycle rather than like that was a one-time thing where I was, you know.
I mean, I really hope so.
Yeah, me too.
I'm like, yeah, I think that it does feel like what were the salons in Paris? It feel like that was my version.
Yes.
In New York. Yeah. And so like, I think all the people, you know, UCB and the comedy scene, there was that in Chicago. And like, I came in late. It's still going on now, but like, I came in later. Like there was like this whole like Nick Kroll and Mulaney and like that, like Chelsea Peretti and all those were before me. And then like my grouping. But I think, yeah, we all kind of witnessed each other's like, oh shit, that like Donald Glover like was right around, like right a little before me. Like some people can't, you're just like, oh, whoa. Like we were all like scrappily, just like excitedly creating stuff. And I think that I don't know if that can exist again, because for me, that was like this time where you don't, it's like, could this ever happen?
Right.
Like, could I ever even make money off of my joyous thing? And like, it's just like this young, like spirited time. Mm-hmm. Also, I say that now from like a romantic view of it.
Yeah.
Where I'm like,
when you were living it
was shitty and like doubtful. And I was like, am I going to work at like this, like SEO assistant job? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that search engine optimization.
They know.
Sure. You know what I mean? I did a lot of like stupid shit. I like uploaded all the TED Talks for like a year, truly. Like, and Chris like tracked their analytic, you know, like what? Like I did all that stuff. So like, yeah, now I look back on it and it was like, and I'm like, it was really a doubtful time too. So like, I don't think I can replicate that, but I think, I hope I can, like, I hope there, it comes in cycles where you can find yourself surrounded by people that are, like, inspiring you on whatever level you're at. Yeah. Or find stuff or work or space that allows you to, like, tap into that again. I mean, I'm hoping. I don't know, like, that's a thing that I'm like kind of struggling with right now, of like feeling this momentum and like not wanting to like or feeling the need to like, gotta like, okay, like all this, like I gotta keep this going. But also I'm like, wait, what is my actual craft? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like it's this, I don't know if I'm making sense.
I want to hear more of that.
Because I'm like, I'm on this train of like show, like television kind of, but like Broad City was that, but was coming from a place of like such a personal, such a like reflective thing that happened to be a show, or it was like such a like, this is us, this is our friendship. We are expressing ourselves in all the ways. And League of Their Own has been that too, but it's just the process has been such a more traditional, I think, working in LA.
Yeah.
Dealing with the network and like Comedy Central, like that experience was so rare. Mm-hmm. That I don't know if I'll get that again. It was like a hands-off kind of vibe.
Okay.
It was like drawing in the studio and somehow everyone got to see it.
Yeah.
Versus you're doing a campaign with like a corporate, like you're doing like a branded campaign with your illustrations.
Yeah. Yep. I got, this happens to me sometime. I got so sucked into listening that I'm not ready to go to the next question. I'm like, yeah,
I get it. I'm really going all over the place.
It's really interesting. I think,
say also they haven't picked up this show yet.
Right.
Just a pilot.
Yeah.
And I will say at the end of the day, I'm like, oh, I've been writing this show for 2 years, maybe more than that right now. And it is, I am getting to talk about so many things that are important to me. And it is like I think it is a powerful show. So when it does, knock on wood, get on the air, there is this satisfying thing of like, it does fulfill the things that I'm like trying to create. It's just the process has been very different.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. There's a thread there. I'm going to come back and I'm going to pull it because that is such a interesting situation to be in. Oh, I got it. There it is. This is I was listening to Neil Gaiman talk with Liz Gilbert and they were talking about how
Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yeah, I know. Me too, man. I love her so much. She was saying that like in production and industry and Wall Street, there's a really clear idea that the red line is going to go up and to the right. It's going to just continue to, your whole goal as a company is to just make more money than the time before. And yet the life cycle of a person is much more like the seasons of a year. And there's just like, you know, now there's winter. And I feel like, you know, creatively I've been an illustrator for 10 years. I've been doing the podcast for 5 years. And I feel like I'm going through, I was at yoga the other day and she said, you know, there's a time that comes where the leaves all fall off the trees and it's a good thing. And I feel like you're talking about this momentum thing. That feels very much like the red line of like, I've got to keep riding this. I've got to keep, you know, keep up to the right. And whereas it's much more natural and human to have these winters.
I know. And that's, I completely agree. It's this, it's a scary thing where I'm also just like, this is such a fortunate thing to say.
Sure.
Where I'm like, I need time.
Yeah.
Like I would love to actually like make something. I'm like quoting Broad City because we say it all the fucking time, is make the space. Like it's like such a theme of it at the end. But I'm like, I'm not making any time to like make the space to like be like independently creative. Like, what do I feel? What do I think without like a project? I often my cycle, which I'm like feeling, I'm feeling like I'm going to do it to myself again, which I love, but it's also like I love it. And it's my work, like a flaw kind of. But also like a douchey flaw is that I'll like pitch a project. So I have to like do it, or like I'll pitch like a book. So I'm like, well, I have to like keep myself busy, but also like explore the things I need to explore within myself.
Yeah.
But it's like business rather than being like, I'm going to take time off and like go and like be quiet. Like, again, such a fortunate thing.
Sure.
Like, what am I talking about?
Yeah.
Like, everyone should be so lucky. But, again, don't know if I'm answering your question.
No, that's
exactly. But, like,
that input. I'm very aware of the input-output thing of, like, man, if I'm just always putting stuff out, where does that, that amount? It's kind of, I always think about it like, the first album of a band they wrote over 18 years or whatever. And the next one they wrote about being on tour. And it's just like, that's not enough input. You need more of that stuff. And same, you should listen to this episode with Neil Gaiman and Liz Gilbert, because she talks about how, it's her podcast. Yeah. And, she talks about, Stephen Fry says that the problem with the second book is that it happens too fast. And she's like, because you think that the first book just flew out of me. It was just so, you know, but that book took 20 years to be made.
That is like all of you. And then
yes.
I have friends who I'm like, who have released like essay books. And like the second one's good, but I'm like, you're doing, they, oh, they, the publisher's like, do another one. That one will. And I'm like, what are you going to write about? Like mine was so like kind of specific, but I would never try to like, I'm like, what the fuck? I have nothing else. I put it all in there. I haven't lived anything else yet. You know what I mean? Like,
but
the world, the business world is like, that did well. You got to go. You're like, but you haven't
you haven't lived another
regrown
book.
Anything yeah. to yeah. like sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we didn't get any answer. Not from you, but we don't have an answer other than this is one of the trickiest parts of commerce mixing with art is that, you know, there's a lot of things balancing within that.
I mean, sometimes I think about like, because a lot of my projects are, I feel like my comedy, I'm like, it's just about my point of view. Like that's all I have. And so if I use that, like, I can trust that. But then if I were to shift it and be like, I'm going to make a thing just about this very specific thing.
Yeah.
Then you can kind of shift.
Right. Yeah.
If that makes
like
sense.
Use a topic to explore.
Like I'm going to write about this day or not, whatever, but like, then you can shift it where it's not like this huge light. I'm like, this is about my light. It's like, no, it's about like apples, like that. Not, but you this know what I mean.
That's so good. I know exactly what you mean.
Because it's like, wow. Well, what if I did just explore?
You put that through the filter because the thing that it is, you know, we talk a lot about on this show, like taste as like the foundation of what you do. Meaning, what you know, like we're talking about the T-shirt and the thing of like it's doing it for you and like leading that. Using that, your taste buds, your creative taste buds as your true north of like, is it lighting them up? And I keep thinking that whole taste thing is your point of view.
Yeah.
And you're just saying, how do you can start instead of, cause I think this is kind of like what a lot of people that are writing fiction do that are not directly related to their life. They're right. saying, what if I wrote for this person that I'm not, but I just filtered my point of view through that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, man, I'm rusty at like, what if I were to just try and write some comedy, like try and like, and then I'm like, well, what do I want to write about? I can write about anything. And then it's like, wait, well, what if I just wrote about like a restaurant experience or like, just I pick like one little thing. Like I know I can write a funny thing, an engaging thing, but when it's so broad, when you have all the options, it's like daunting and it's like, unimaginable where to start. But when you, it's like as an exercise, you can kind of, if you trust yourself as an artist in whatever way, you can figure out a way to make that engaging.
Yeah. That's super inspiring to me. Cause I think I've talked so much about my life and my career and that, you know, the talk that I'm kind of doing on tour is about my life. And I think that there is a shift of like, well, when that cycle's over, maybe what I'll do is explore fantasy, just explore like just make up worlds rather than always have to be telling my story.
Right. It seems like it's just like a nice, like a, not a safety thing, but like, oh, you don't have to, like, you will always be telling your story whatever, but like,
yeah.
It takes the pressure off to be like, I'm going to like talk about my, like anything.
Yes.
Like
it reminds me of Wes Anderson. Like example. I feel like every Wes Anderson movie, most of them are like the same thing of like people with dad problems. And then they're just like, well, what about these characters with dad problems? And this like, you know, a family that's like revolving around this toxic dad. And he's just writing it in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah. I never like put that together.
Clearly
he has daddy issues.
I think so. Yeah. I think there's gotta be in there. Okay. So I want to be respectful of your time. I've got two other questions. One is are there things now that are lighting up those creative taste buds like comedy was in the UCB days, or is there things that are resonating on those levels for you now?
I mean, I wish I could say that like, I was like, I'm doing this right now. I mean, sure. I just ended this pilot on Sunday night, and I'm like trying to like come up for air.
Yeah.
With that and feel, and I'm like have to go into the edit with that. But I would say
the answer can be no.
No, I mean, I want it to be. I am dying to make things with my hands again. Like, I am dying to, like, draw or, like, just to create artwork again. Like, I haven't done that in so long. The last thing I did was this illustrated book, which truly, like, isn't even what I used to do. It was, like, an awesome thing that this publisher let me do. And I did it in, like, 3 months, 4 months. I drew like so many drawings at nights and on the weekends.
It's a really
and
cool
it
book.
Was like, thanks. And it was just like this like funny thing that I was like enamored by, like what people carry around. And it just like let me like play. And I'm kind of itching for something.
It's
called Carry This Book. And it's like what people might carry around in their bags.
Yeah.
And it just, it truly just let me draw stuff. And it was just so fun. It was like I was just drawing shit. Yeah. And I want to find a thing. I need to find the next thing where I'm just like engaged in that way, like just making stuff. And I haven't found it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're in the kind of foraging for this neck, that deep resonance thing that's lighting you up. Okay. So the last question is, I'm pretty sure that you were a big Boys to Men fan. Is that true? I think you talked about it on Hot Ones.
Oh, I was. Did I? Don't remember that because that was so insane.
It looks I so was like, mean
it
and
feels
painful.
Like you are wasted. At a certain point, we were like, and Alana and I felt it's so amazing. Sick all day because I don't eat meat. Uh-huh. I'm like a vegetarian, pescatarian.
Yeah.
And we ate like a head of cauliflower. Because it's like buffalo cauliflower, so we were like sick.
Oh my god!
But it was like
it's amazing.
But I mean,
you should go watch it.
Because I'm from Philly,
yeah.
So I love Boys to Men, but I mean I haven't listened in quite a while.
So everybody knows on the show, I'm a huge Boys to Men fan. I grew up listening to them, and I even did an episode about finding your perfect harmony in your creative career and figuring out whether you were a Nathan, Michael, Sean, or Wanye.
Okay.
So stay tuned for that episode. It'll be somewhere in there. I was going to say, man, this is the, we're not, I, this isn't real. This isn't a real request, but I was going to pretend like, it's the end of the episode. Should we sing a few verses of End of the Road together and just, well,
I'm trying to think if I would know it. I think I would maybe know it.
Yeah, it's We Belong Together.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many, as soon as we came up with this idea of like, let's think about a silly way to end it. And then we started going through the Boys to Men back catalog.
Right.
And pretty much every suggestion is a terrible one for this joke. Including I started singing it, realizing that was a terrible one.
I mean, I am down. I just don't know if I know that I can do the tune.
It wasn't real.
It wasn't real? Don't you want to take
request.
It back?
I'm taking
You're
it.
You're not leaning into the...
I'm scared. I'm scared. Oh, step
you gotta
off
go
the wall.
Off. Go in.
Well, what Boys to Men song do you know? My favorite is...
I mean, do you know what
Water
song?
Runs Dry.
I don't think I know that one, but I did love, my friends and I were obsessed with the one with Mariah Carey.
Yes.
Where they were
day.
In the recording they have the, studio.
Yeah, you've yeah, got yeah. the look
I
right
have
now.
The headphones on.
Yes. Let's hear a One Sweet Day. Can you just pull
how's
that
it,
up?
How's it start?
Sorry. Sorry, I never told
oh
you.
Oh my God. You mean, I'm going to do it.
Do it. Yes.
Sorry. I never told you.
All I wanted to say.
But now I...
I don't know the rest of it.
But you've gone away, right?
So far away. Yeah. You got to point to the notes on that part.
Now, wait, no, and then they come back down.
I think
took
a,
your lover for granted.
I took it for granted.
Fuck, we need. I know, need. I'm sorry. No. That's, I do know it once it
that
plays.
Was beautiful.
If it plays,
I don't have any Wi-Fi here. The cell phone coverage isn't picking up. I can't pull anything up.
This is really important now.
I'm we got help.
Oh, here we go. We got it.
We'll clear this.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cheap song, I'm sure. Oh, it's on Mariah's.
Yeah.
Not Boyz II Men. Okay. This is where they come into the studio and they're all laughing and then they all have heads. Here we go. I never told you.
This is the best moment.
More than... wanted to say. You gotta take, I had to take one off to
hear
it.
You gotta hear it, yeah.
Now it's too late to hold you.
But
you've gone away, so far away. I'm going to be Mariah.
Yeah.
What?
This was the best thing that's ever happened to me. Oh my gosh. That was amazing.
We were like
Thank
good
you.
For a we, second. It,
yeah.
Who I was think that so. Singing in the...
I think that's Nathan. Boy? I think that's Nathan. He had the glasses. He was kind of... That's in my episode I talk about. He's like the one with the smarts, so it's cerebral creativity. Because, you know, he's got the glasses.
I have a quick Boyz II Men song. So like my dad lived in this neighborhood called Chesterbrook. Uh-huh. Which was like a community for divorced dads. It's hilarious, like condos.
What?
It's a project I'm actually working on forever. But it's like when my parents got divorced, my dad moved into like one of these like 90s like condo places, and it was like truly 80% divorced parents. So I remember
one day, crazy.
I had like a sleepover, and a bunch of girls. We were like, I don't know what we were doing. We were like getting dropped off, and there was a limo in the development, which was like suburbs. We were like, there's a fucking limo. What's going on? And I don't know why we went up to the driver, because it was waiting outside, like across the street from me. And I was like, we were like, what's going on? Like, who's in this? And he was like, it's a guy from Boyz II Men.
What?
And he never told us who, but I was like,
my gosh.
I will never forget. We were like, it's one of the Boyz II Men is in across, and I think they told us, or I made this up, that he was like visiting his lady.
Oh, in the divorced.
It was like a single kind of
That's good.
I don't know if I made that up. It felt real.
Maybe that's your next fiction piece. You can just write out this whole Boyz II Men, not fan fiction thing.
Yeah,
about him showing up in the divorcee.
I don't even know which boy, which man.
You get to decide. But I would hope it was Wanye. He was my favorite. He's the one that's always going all over the place in the background. You know, at the end of the song.
Right,
that's my favorite part. Okay, I know you didn't have all the time. Thank you so much for doing
this.
This means the world to me. Oh my gosh, thank you, Abby.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Beep. All right. Abby, oh my goodness gracious, my heart hurts with, you know, not being able to fully articulate how special it is to me and my audience. Seriously, thank you for taking out time. I know you're super busy. Man, so thankful. Hopefully we get to do it again someday. Go follow Abby on Instagram. Go follow her, Abby Jacobson, just like it sounds, ABBIJACOBSON. She's about to do an illustration project where she's going to do 100 drawings and sell them for $100 each and give it away to a local charity in LA that works with the homeless. Go follow that project and go snag one of those drawings. I'm going to be first in line, so you better back off. Go check out her Instagram. It's super, super great. Also, go check out Stacey Michelson's Instagram, as well as Raven and Crow. We couldn't have done this episode without the help of their studio space. Stacey Michelson, StacyMichelson. Amazing food illustrations, like really educational about things like sriracha and shaved ice and ginger creams. She draws these things and puts all these facts and figures. She does these big posters with ranch dressing on them. And it's Really great. If you're a foodie, you got to check this out. Her stories are hilarious, by the way. When she's cooking up stuff, she does funny voices, and, you know, I'm a fan of that. I love Stacy. She is one of my favorite people. Me and Sophie just love her to death. She's so funny and unique and amazing, and you're going to love her. Also, go check out Raven and Crow. Raven and Crow. It's also their studio. First time I ever met them was them allowing us to record in their space. They were extremely, extremely lovely people, and we are so grateful to them. Go check them out on Instagram, Raven and Crow, all spelled out just like it sounds. I was going to save this to the end. I wanted to tell the story of how Abby got on this episode. It was quite epic and unlike anything I've ever experienced. It happened so fast. Getting her on the show, this is how it went down. Just a little over a month ago, I tweeted, do any of my friends know Abby Jacobson? She's a dream podcast guest for me. She went to MICA, the school, the college for illustration, and has had such an interesting career arc. Any leads? Thank you. I have a lot of friends that went to MICA, Maryland Institute College of Art. And so I thought maybe somebody knows her. So I just tweeted. I didn't even tag her or anything. And I knew it was a long shot, and I just completely forgot about it as soon as I tweeted it. But then, a few hours later, I was getting out of my car, and I saw there was a ton of notifications on Twitter, and I thought, that's weird, I haven't even really posted anything today. I opened the app, clicked on the mentions, started reading the replies, and I got to a reply of the post about Abby, and it said, I know her, where do you record your podcast? And I thought, whoa, awesome, a lead. Then I was like, I gotta figure out who knows Abby. Who is this tweeting at me? And I looked at who it was from, and it was from Abby Jacobson. And I was instantly overcome with insane levels of joy. Yada, yada, yada. Next thing I know, I'm sat in front of Abby and Stacy's studio. And it happened so fast. It was so incredible. Super, super awesome experience. So there you go. Hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did making it. Thanks for everything, people. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Alex Sugg for our soundtrack. You can find the instrumental tunes that you heard on this show on Spotify and Apple Music by searching Creative Pep Talk soundtrack. Pretty obvious. Thanks to Chris Graham. Couldn't have recorded this without you. Couldn't have come up with these questions and fine-tuned them without you. Chris Graham really produced this episode, so producer credit goes out to Chris Graham of Chris Graham Mastering and the Six Figure Home Studio Podcast. Thanks to all of you for listening, and until we speak again, stay pepped up.